Welcome to Composer's Favorites, a podcast by Film Scoring Tips. I am Giovanni Rotondo, and today we are gonna learn more about composer Fabrizio Mancinelli's favorite things. Enjoy the show! My guest today is the composer of Snow Queen 3 and 4. He conducted the soundtrack of Green Book and Space Jam 2 for Chris Bowers, and he is a Fulbright grantee of 2008 and a Sundance Film and TV Lab Fellow of 2015. Fabrizio Mancinelli, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm feeling so honored and pleased to be on your show that I follow and I enjoy. And thank you, because being discussing and talking with a fellow composer that I esteem and admire, you know, and I've known for some time, is always refreshing.
You are very kind, and I must say I am the one honored to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming. So I asked you a little bit about your favorites, and I love your answers. We will start with your favorite film, which is also one of my favorite films, I must confess. And the film is Fantasia, or as we Italians say, Fantasia, by Walt Disney.
Yeah. I first knew that as Fantasia, in fact. I was like, I think, 8 or 9 years old when I watched a VHS that was recorded from TV, so it was totally uncensored. It was the first version that was totally uncensored of Fantasia, and I started to love the fact that I always wanted to be an animator before being a musician, but I cannot draw a straight single line. Fantasia is like a film that blends image and music together. Actually, Walt Disney, the first name they gave to it was the concert feature. Hear the images and see the music. And it was blending together. So I said, there is something that puts together my two favorite things in the world, and it's this movie. And actually, it's a very deep movie. There are moments that are like very heavy, like to understand. There is abstract animation with the Toccata and Fuga in D minor by Bach in the beginning. But it like called my feelings to think that I could express myself through music, maybe, and not through animation growing up. And that's what happened in the future. And there is another parallel movie that I like as well a lot, which is the Italian spoof of Fantasia by Bruno Bozzetto, which is Allegro non troppo, which I recommend everybody to watch together at the same time of Fantasia, because like it's a totally different movie. It's maybe more for adult in some pieces, but like it shows you that music and animation are integral to each other in a very deep way. It's a great art form combined. And it shows to show you my passion, I spoke about Fantasia. So I have like this is the roadshow program for the premiere of Fantasia in 1940 with all the information. It's like a concert program. So there is a Walt Disney's page. And then the narrator of Fantasia was Dean Stahler, who was an American composer. And actually was the one who was making at this time more money with ASCAP, royalties with ASCAP. But to this day, his biggest contribution is like that he was a very important film critic. And of course, there is a page all dedicated, let me find it, to one of the greatest conductors of that time, was Leopold Stokowski with Putti's Philadelphia Orchestra. And all the pieces are analyzed in detail, like going to a concert. It was a roadshow, so there were theaters all around America, they had implied that I had installed the Fantasound, which was this like surround kind of sound of the time. It was a very expensive endeavor for Walt Disney, and it didn't make money. It was a failure, but in the long time, all Disney big movies that we call masterpieces in the past, there was a different concept that for the enterprise, they needed to make money. Of course, immediately would have been preferable, but through the long term, the long period, they were long period investments for the company. So starting from Snow White, who made a lot of money in the beginning, but like movies that were considered a failure, like Sleeping Beauty or like Fantasia, today they wouldn't be possible because the companies is like, how much money does the movie make in the first weekend? If it doesn't make money in the first weekend, it's a failure. But how many movies don't make money in the first weekend? So they get forgotten. Instead, in the past, with the re-rentals, they made money and they contributed to build empires, you know?
And also to evolve animation, right? I think Fantasia and then Fantasia 2000 made a big impact, a big dent in the way animation was done before and after. So yeah. luckily things worked differently back then.
Yeah, it was like considered an art form. I always love one thing about American cinematic art, that it can be commercial, but at the same time, it's an art form that evolved. Animation was considered by many the visual art of the 20th century, because like a lot of great, great artists went into animation. Like in Fantasia, they were employed like doing visual development and understanding what could it be. I have pieces of art from animated movies in my home, and they are on my wall, and they are next to paintings, and they're my art form. They communicate to me, and they are very modern. So I really feel and love that stuff.
That's lovely. I couldn't agree more with you. And I know that Fantasia is not the only Disney related film, or in general Disney related thing that you love. You love most of Disney things, and for instance, you were mentioning to me that as a child your favorite theme park was Disneyland, and this is something that is coming back in your life, right?
Yeah, I have a big connection with Disney parks in many ways. So when I was a kid, there was no Disney parks in Europe. Disneyland Paris, I was around 13, 14. First time I went, I was 15, let's say, with my... So my way of knowing the parks was like I had postcards that were coming out with Nonna Barbara's cookies, Grandma Duck cookies, and every package had the postcard, and you could get a map and put all the rides of the park. So I knew exactly the map of Disneyland California with all the rides. I knew what it was. I knew maybe more than many kids who lived here, but it was a dream. So when I was 15, I went to Disneyland Paris for the first time. Still, it didn't prevent me from dreaming, you know? And the first time I went to Disneyland USA, the first Disneyland founded by Walt Disney, I was 30 years old. So I was still a kid at heart, but I was a man. But the best thing is I got to re-experience that through the eyes of the kid. For the first time, I brought my daughter to the park.
Lovely.
It was last year, 1 year ago exactly. And my daughter was 3.5, and she kept saying, "Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Mom," to my wife. She was looking around, and I was looking into her eyes. I wasn't looking at the park. I found myself looking through the eyes of a kid, because when you grow, you start, okay, I work in this field. I work in this industry. You know, it's entertainment, but at the same time, you lose sometimes track of the dream. And looking into her eyes, I only saw the dream, and I only saw the dream in part. And I reconnected again with my past, and hopefully with my future, and understood the reason I came into this field, which is strictly related. It's all like I got carried into that. Mm-hmm. It's not that I could choose. It was something like captivating me, you know? I've been very lucky in my life to seem to have a path built for me. And whenever I fought it in my life, I became an attorney as well to please my parents, for instance. Whenever I went away from music, entertainment, etc., it called me back. And when I saw my daughter seeing those things in the park, marveling at them, I understood this is the true nature of what we all do, work in music, entertainment, and things, like trying to create something that can involve people. So that is like the best thing, experiencing something that connects me with my daughter deeply. From the moment I read the bedtime stories, we have books about the park that we can share. We're building a future experience together. And that's why Disneyland was with me when I visited that with my parents in Europe, in Paris. And I found myself taking the same exact pictures here with my daughter in the same spots of the park, because the park's structure is similar. So that, and my favorite park is Disneyland California, because it was the one built by Walt Disney, who we only know, as many of us know, as a logo, but it was a person who had a dream, and a dream not just based on building the big enterprise that the company is today, but a dream of creating some long-lasting entertainment, which is like the point of many masterpieces. You don't just like you look, it was the creative soul of the company. His brother was the economical and financial soul of the company. And that worked very well, so they could concentrate. It's like us composers, you know, we need to concentrate on the creative and artistic side of our job mostly to create something that's long-lasting and everlasting.
I love what you said, and especially about reconnecting with the place through the eyes of your daughter. I think I'm gonna play this episode for my wife and use it as an excuse to finally go to Disneyland and experience the new Star Wars theme park, which I cannot wait to do. But you know, with kids, you always have the nicest excuse to do those things.
And especially now that Disney owns all the properties, from Marvel to Star Wars to everything.
Exactly.
It's like everything for everybody. Everything for everybody.
Absolutely.
So,
before starting the show, the recording the episode, you showed me another prop related to Disney.
Well, this is a roadshow program of Mary Poppins. I also have the original program of the premiere, but it's in storage. But this is like signed by Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman is one of the two brothers who wrote the songs of Mary Poppins. And he's my friend. I'm lucky to call him my friend. And we are collaborating actually on a featurette by another Disney legend, Andreas Deja, who designed Scar in The Lion King, who's hanging on my wall there, or like Jafar or Gaston. And Andreas, when he left Disney, he was like, he started his own featurette, which is called Mushka. I'm gonna show you a maquette from the film. This is a maquette from the film. Mushka. It's a tiger and Sarah, the main characters.
I love the design of it, and it's incredible that you are friends with the composer of Mary Poppins. That's
impressive. We're working with Richard, has written a theme and a song for this film, and I'm writing the rest of the scores and the score and arranging Richard's song. Mm-hmm. So that signature, it's something that he gave me, this program with the signed by him. And it's a memento I cherish because he just turned 94 last week. And working, you know, there is the one of song in Mary Poppins that says, a man has dreams of working with giants to carve his niche in the edifice of time, something like that. And I'm so lucky because coming from a smaller city in Italy called L'Aquila, beautiful, beautiful city. Not as big as Rome, but beautiful city that was destroyed by an earthquake while I was studying in America. So a lot of pain, etc. But I came from the city where, like, you know, smaller villages, you don't usually have a dream on walking with giants. And I'm even not walking, I'm even working with giants. With a giant of, like, everybody, I think every day in the world sings or hums his tunes, like from the parks. He also wrote the music for Disneyland Parks with his brother. Like, It's a Small World, which
is
one of the most famous songs. Or he wrote Winnie the Pooh. He wrote songs for Jungle Book. Actually, tomorrow I'm going to the opening of an exhibit in San Francisco for Jungle Book by Walt Disney that the Walt Disney Family Museum is opening. And we're going to re-listen to all of his songs. You know, I Want to Be Like You. And two more recent years that he wrote something like even for some Marvel films, you know, some songs, some tunes. And he's still very active, you know, less than usual, but like a 94, I can understand. Sitting at the piano with a person like him, I've been so, I don't know, because there is always like everybody says that they are blessed, they are so lucky. I feel lucky coming from a small place in mountains, having a path in my life that I got to be trained other than my great teacher in the conservatory, but I studied with Luis Bacalov, music for film. Then I got to assist one of my favorite operatic composers, Giancarlo Menotti, who was the founder of the Spoleto Festival. Then I get to work with Richard Sherman. I mean, like, I still pinch myself. Sometimes I have like to breathe and think that, you know, we always want more. We always are ambitious to do more in life. And sometimes I have to stop to count my blessing and realize that I've already been blessed more than 99.9% of the colleagues that are in this field and are like extremely talented, you know, and maybe they don't meet luck like I've met.
I like to believe that when the opportunity knocks at your door, you have to have the talent to grab it. And you and your story is a testament to that. So I'm sure we're gonna hear about you more and more in the future.
Also, I know one thing, that destiny doesn't know my home address. And despite the last 2 years of the pandemic that have been very taxing on me, because I usually go around and I don't go around to network. Everybody asks me, how do you network? I don't know. I go to places, I talk to people. They might be the janitor. I don't know if they are the janitor. And at the end of the thing, I figure out, like my Snow Queen 3. I got recommended by one of the directors. That was my first animated feature and my first bigger gig. And I got recommended by a brilliant Pixar story man, etc., a teacher, mentor of many other people in animation. Just a few days before my wedding, I went to an exhibit and I got introduced to him by the director of Lion King. And we start chatting. I didn't know who he was, honestly. But I like the person, and we start talking about art. We like each other. We exchange contacts, and then he went on my then website, listened to some of my stuff, and he told me, "Do you want a demo for this?" I'm like, "Of course!" And every time in my life it has happened, I never, the times that I ask, it never worked. The times I didn't ask, they come to me, and in such a generous way that exceeds all the odds of this like business. So when they ask me, how do you network? And I say one thing all the time, just be yourself, just see the people. There's no need to say, oh, I'm this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and I want to work. Here's my business card. I don't carry a business card anymore. I exchange an email or something. And I feel that knowing each other over a meal or calling somebody when they don't have a job to offer is much better, because they will remember when they have a job to offer if you're a real friend. And one friend more in life is always a treasure, because like I tell the people I collaborate with, we're going to be retirement friends. The ones that call each other when they don't have a job, when we are old and we look back and we are happy about our life, because what it counts at the end of the day is not how successful like on paper we are, but how successful in life. And it's many more, like I differentiate
Layers.
my bets. I like to differentiate my bets.
That's brilliant advice, and I totally subscribe to that, and invite the listeners of the show, especially the ones that are starting in this business, to listen to Fabrizio. So I didn't mention you live in Los Angeles, and but your favorite city in the world is not LA, it's Rome.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, for heart reasons. My family, I grew up in L'Aquila. My dad is from L'Aquila. My mom originally is from Napoli, actually from Nola, next to Napoli, and but they moved to Rome, so I have cousins in Rome. I had my grandparents until last year. I had my grandmother in Rome, so Rome meant many Sundays. Rome meant when I visited family. There is my aunt that I love like a mom number two, and my uncle that he used to take me for the first time to the opera. So it was my Sundays, and that's my heart reason. Then, of course, I like morning walks. Like recently, I went on the way back from a recording session in Budapest, I stayed in Rome a few days to start a mix of the music. And I have so many friends, but also waking up in the morning in such a beautiful city and taking a walk when there's still not many people around Piazza Navona and all the places, it's so refreshing to see the art. I need to get inspired, because a beautiful computer with beautiful technology helps me write what feeds my soul. And I might sound a little bit too romantic, but it's not. I come from I am classically trained as a composer and a conductor, and I know technology is important, but without the background, I can sit on the computer and write the same four chords over and over. Instead, if I see the colors of life, it touches a button that unlocks magic, hopefully. And so a city like Rome, it's refreshing for me like that, even though now where there are seagulls, wild boars around, and it's it's not so clean and neat, but those walks are like priceless.
I remember another guest of the show, Shai Rozov's words when he came to visit him. I used to live in Rome. When he came to visit, he said, "This is the most beautiful, dirty city I've ever seen." which is fun, but yeah, unfortunately, it's not kept as it deserves.
Yeah, but, I mean,
but it's so beautiful. It's so incredible. You mentioned, was it your uncle that brought you to opera?
Yes.
Did you see your favorite opera with him, which is The Triptych by Puccini?
You know, why? Weird enough, that's an opera I've never seen on stage, because I never got to be in a city where it was performed. But Il Trittico is my favorite opera, just because it has everything in three micro acts. It's three micro operas. And my favorite of the three is Gianni Schicchi, which is perfect, the perfect comedy. It lasts 50 minutes, and it has every single character, from the more dramatic and lyric moment of O Mio Babbino Caro, and to the comedy moments, to beautiful concertato writing of the Boazzo Donati's family. So I've never watched with him. I watched so many other operas, from the Annon Rusalka by Antonin Dvorak at the Roma Opera, to the Don Pasquale, to Tosca, etc. But like this uncle of mine was the one who brought me first time to the Spoleto Festival when I was 12. And I started telling my parents I wanted to be a musician, and they started like saying, you're going to be an attorney. And so I had to become a lawyer as well, long story short, but at the same time of conservatory. But like in Spoleto, I remember the first opera I watched was Le Nozze di Figaro, for instance. And the stage director was Giancarlo Menotti, and 6 years later I became his assistant director. So that was like so special. My kind of upbringing in the world of music was like very weird for somebody who wanted then to pursue a film scoring career. You know, I did everything. I studied how to be on the stage, you know, and how to direct singers. I studied conducting, I studied like opera from the ancient music, but everything came back to my life. In conservatory in Italy, I even studied organ and Gregorian chant.
Wow.
Which is a subject that you study for 1 year in the composition class. Mm-hmm. And at the time I thought, I'm never going to use this. And then I had to write some organ pieces, et cetera. They came so fast without reading anything else. Gregorian chant, I used it and I write for it in other projects of mine. So everything came back to my life in a weird way.
Amazing. And aside from opera, I was reading about your favorite film scores, and one of the names, one of the composers, jumped to my eyes, because it's the one that when somebody asks me, who do you think was the most talented composer in the film scoring world, I usually mention him, and that is Nino Rota. And one of your favorite scores is The Leopard by Nino Rota, yeah. Which is, it is kind of operatic.
Yeah, it's a symphony. I actually use that theme also in Sinfonia sopra una canzone d'amore, the theme that does da 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 da, which is a beautiful harmonic progression that gives me goosebumps. Those are three scores that it's weird. I get goosebumps very rarely, and they every time I play them, they give me goosebumps. So there must be something in the harmonic progression that touches somewhere. And I feel it's the most complete, because everybody would say, okay, Nino Rota, yes, the Fellini score or the Godfather. But like the scores that he wrote for Luchino Visconti, that Rocco and his brothers, or like, for instance, The Leopard, maybe like they touch, like it's a symphonic score. It's a score that few composers could have written. Like Nino Rota had the same training of huge, huge composer. I feel very close to that school in many ways, although, of course, I'm more of this day. But like there was like composer like Samuel Barber, Giancarlo Menotti, Leonard Bernstein. They all studied with the same people in Philadelphia, the Curtis Institute, you know. And Giancarlo Menotti and Nino Rota were friends as kids. And in fact, Nino Rota's only natural daughter, and that has been recognized, and it's his daughter, Nina Rota, lives very close and is a recent friend of mine. And we've got to talk about this friendship of Menotti and Rota when they were kids, and their moms. They were friends, but competitors, talking about their enfant prodige, because both Giancarlo and Nino were enfant prodige. It's such a deep composer, not only a film composer, who actually, from what I heard and I understand, even from his daughter, he didn't care about the awards. Like his Oscar was together with the kitchen, in the pantry of the kitchen, kept in a
really?
Box. After
wow.
He died, his Oscar for The Godfather, Il Padrino Parte Seconda, Part 2. And he wrote operas, he wrote symphonies, he wrote concerts, and he wrote brilliant scores, like even like the Romeo and the best scores of Franco Zeffirelli's movies, Romeo and Juliet, for instance. It's like Nino Rota, and it's different voices for different films. Or in Italy, it's very famous. I don't know in other countries, but there is Il Giornalino di Gian Burrasca, which was a TV play. He wrote the music and the songs. Luis Bacalo arranged them. Lina Wertmüller wrote the lyrics. So it's three Academy Awards for the songs, three
Incredible.
Academy Award winners for the songs. And it's like, it made harmonic choices that are not so easy, very easy. And he was a great teacher and in Bari, and a great conservatory director for Bari Conservatory in southern Italy for so many years. Like he was a very, very important music figure in Italy and all over the world. Like he worked everywhere. He was very, very well respected by his peers. He worked with Eduardo De Filippo, another massive cultural Italian figure. I am a firm believer that to progress in a better future, we need to look back and then continue. Because if we are embarrassed of our past, you know, like our parents, musical parents, will distinguish us in the future. That doesn't make us just old. If I can like music of 200 years ago, but I can still be interested and love today's music and blend in the forms together, you know, and know the forms together. I think I love technology. I am very interested into that. I'm very interested now in synth, for instance. I just wrote a mini score for a proof of concept, just synthesizers. But I always try to bring myself into that, because otherwise I would do whatever, whoever does that, you know, can do. I need to be myself somehow.
Absolutely, and this is great to hear. You've been so generous. There are so many favorites that we didn't touch upon, among which your favorite food, Neapolitan pizza. I must mention it. I'm a proud Neapolitan, so I'm
bravissimo. Ecco, I love that, and I know that, of course. And
I'm really happy to hear, and also to hear that you have Neapolitan root in your family.
Yeah, that's my proud pride. My pride, 50% of my blood.
But I will now ask you about your future. I know I've heard you. You know, we discussed a little bit before the episode, and I know you have some amazing projects coming up. Can you tell us?
I'm going to show you some favorite projects. We recorded them in the past. I have like basically 5 unreleased films, and I'm working on another one. But one is like this. It's called The Land of Dreams. It's a musical feature with 10 original songs and a score by me. I wrote music and lyrics for this film by Nicola Battangeli. It's an Italian musical in English with a mixed cast, which takes place in the 1920s in New York within an immigrant community. So I hope it should come out in the fall, finally. We finished working on that last year. Last May, I think it was the last dubbing session, but we filmed just before the pandemic. I wrote all the songs. I finished all the songs in September 2019. So okay. You can imagine how much I'm looking forward to share it with the world, because like music, if it's on paper or recorded, is dead until somebody listens to that and interacts and responds to that. You know, it's like, and I'm looking forward. Then I have a thriller, an independent comedy. I have Mushka, which we are finishing now. And then I just finished recording and mixing Out of the Nest, which is like an animated feature for us in English for a Thai studio called Shell Hut Animation, directed by directors here in America. The music I wrote here in America with my team, like programming and mixing all over the world, recording soloists from Singapore to Hong Kong to Switzerland, and the orchestra, I went to record it in Budapest. So it's truly in a world of diversity, it's like quite a diverse project, because we are employing people all over the world of any and every ethnicity and in a real way. So I hope that people will see that, because we could brainstorm coming from different points and really different cultures without risking to sound too like, didascalic, etc. I just like, we had meetings in trying to understand how, I'm not Asian, of course, but they asked me to write Asian melodies or studying. So I studied deeply the scales and their music, and I metabolized through them through my eyes. So it's the eyes of somebody who is a virgin to that sound and tries to give his take of that. And they were very generous with me, my producers, in complimenting and in like getting accustomed. We got accustomed to each other, and we loved each other at the end. So that was like, these are two projects that I really care a lot. And of course, the boat, the thriller. I mean, every movie I make, no matter how big or small, I try to give 100%. I think we need to give 100%, because they're all our, everybody says they're all our kids. We all, but like at the end of the day, I want to go back and re-listen to my music in a few months, in a few years, and say, oh, I did a decent job. You know, I did my job. I did a good job. I did, my duty is like to bring who I am to the project in many ways. And I got to work with great professionals. Like, not only my directors are amazing, but also my team of friends that works with me and people. They are the ones who make my music sound good, because the music until is on just paper or in my software. It sounds good. Yes, there's melodies, there's harmonies, there's voicing, there's everything. But then when it gets like polished and mixed and programmed properly, you know, and recorded properly, that is when the magic happens. And to have like colleagues who are also friends working with me. That is like the plus, because we have an excuse to talk to each other.
I love these words, and I think they are perfect to conclude our show today. Fabrizio, grazie mille for coming to the show. It was a great pleasure.
Grazie to you.
That's our show for today. We like to make our episodes roughly the same length, therefore we sometimes edit out some of the guests' favorites. However, extended cuts of the show are available to our Patreon subscribers. Check filmscoringtips.com/content to find more about this. Thanks for joining us, and see you soon.